Today is Wednesday, February 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the Senate is expected to acquit U.S. President Donald Trump today. Plus, the coronavirus outbreak has now affected almost 25,000 people, and UN agencies report hundreds of thousands of Syrians are facing a humanitarian emergency. Those stories and more are all coming up next. U.S. President Donald Trump gave the third State of the Union address of his presidency Tuesday, just hours ahead of the close of his impeachment trial, when Republican-majority U.S. Senate is expected to acquit him of charges that he abused powers of his office and obstructed Congress's efforts to investigate him. In the annual speech informing the U.S. Congress on upcoming policy priorities, Mr. Trump primarily focused on domestic achievements aimed at appealing to voters in the presidential election. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson starts us off.
Madam Speaker, the President of the United States.
The president starting his State of the Union in the 2020 election year with a reminder of his campaign promises in 2016.
3 years ago, we launched the Great American Comeback. Tonight, I stand before you to share the incredible results.
In the chamber where he was impeached by U.S. House Democrats less than 2 months ago, Trump made no mention of his Senate trial, but refused Speaker Pelosi's handshake and focused on his efforts to build the American economy.
If we hadn't reversed the failed economic policies of the previous administration, the world would not now be witnessing this great economic success.
Heading into the 2020 presidential election year, Trump has secured a personal best approval rating of 49% of the country. His speech focused on domestic policy initiatives, including infrastructure and health care, and an assurance the U.S. is addressing the coronavirus.
We are coordinating with the Chinese government and working closely together on the coronavirus outbreak in China. My administration will take all necessary steps to safeguard our citizens from this threat.
Trump did address several of his administration's key foreign policy priorities, including inviting special guest Venezuelan President Juan Guaido.
All Americans are united with the Venezuelan people in their righteous struggle for freedom. Socialism destroys nations, but always remember, freedom unifies the soul.
The recent U.S. drone killing of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani also earned a mention, as Trump acknowledged protests in Iran and once again laid out the terms for diplomatic engagement.
The Iranian regime must abandon its pursuit of nuclear weapons, stop spreading terror, death, and destruction, and start working for the good of its own people. Because of our powerful sanctions, the Iranian economy is doing very, very poorly. We can help them make a very good and short-time recovery. It can all go very quickly, but perhaps they are too proud or too foolish to ask for that help. We are here. Let's see which road they choose. It is totally up to them.
Trump said his administration had found a new solution for peace in the Middle East.
Recognizing that all past attempts have failed, we must be determined and creative in order to stabilize the region and give millions of young people the chance to realize a better future.
Well, once again suggesting a withdrawal of the U.S. presence in Afghanistan.
I am not looking to kill hundreds of thousands of people in Afghanistan, many of them totally innocent. It is also not our function to serve other nations as law enforcement agencies.
But the president offered few opportunities for bipartisan cooperation.
Simply because he didn't mention impeachment didn't mean that every other aspect of the speech revealed his displeasure, his annoyance. And it was very clear watching the room that the feeling was mutual. You did not see Democrats applauding some points that could be national unity. At the same time, you did not see very much offering of working together, which is what a State of the Union is supposed to be.
Gretchen Whitmer, governor of Michigan, a state that could play a key role in deciding the 2020 presidential election, gave the Democratic response.
Bullying people on Twitter doesn't fix bridges. It burns them.
But as Trump completed his speech, Speaker Pelosi ripped her copy of his remarks in half. A reminder the deeply partisan battles of impeachment are far from over. Katherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
And joining us now on the phone is Villanova University political science professor David Barrett. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Steve. Thank you.
So this is election season. It began formally kind of on Monday with the Iowa caucuses, and we're still awaiting results from that. But the State of the Union, in many regards, was also a campaign speech for the president. And as is widely expected, he will be acquitted later this afternoon of the two articles of impeachment. I want to get your analysis on what it may mean for the presidential race moving forward.
You mean what the impact of the speech on the presidential race?
And the and the acquittal.
Okay. You know, this country is so divided over President Trump, so that Republicans who support Trump, which is almost all of them, not quite, I think will feel and express themselves in a very triumphant fashion, as he will do, will continue to do. And Democrats will keep reminding fellow Americans that this president has been impeached, and that is a stain on his record. I think the greatest impact will be in particular states. I noted, and I'm thinking now about congressional races. Senator Doug Jones of Alabama has said he will vote to convict, and that's a hard sell in the state of Alabama.
Why is that?
Well, it's just a very pro-Trump state. I'm originally from the Deep South. I have a sister who lives in Alabama, and I sort of tend to follow politics there. So I think it's a fascinating move that Senator Jones is making. I think it's courageous. Sometimes what is courageous is not politically smart or expedient. So he may be signing his own political death warrant. So there are states where this matters a lot, because, you know, Jones did manage to win in a special election before, but under some peculiar circumstances with a very flawed Republican candidate. So, and arguably there'll be some other states now, and some, you know, Maine and Senator Collins, depending upon how she votes, that will be interesting. As for the larger impact on, say, the coming presidential election, in one sense, look, impeachment is always a very historic event. And so is the vote that the Senate then makes after the House impeaches. But I don't think it's had much impact. The reporter talked about President Trump having a 49% approval rating, but that was one particular poll, the Gallup poll. And a political scientist will always say, look at the collection of the most recent polls. So I think there's no doubt his approval rating has gone upward by a couple of points over the last weeks, but it's more in the 43.5%, 44% approval. So that's a benefit to him right now, but I suspect that it will probably sink down a little bit. So he faces a challenge in winning re-election, but he has certain advantages, the advantage of the incumbency, where you can make a statement, and a lot of people will believe you, even if it's not true. It's as if he was running against Barack Obama last night. He kept referring to the prior administration, and he strongly implied that the economy was a disaster in the Obama era. I think a lot of his supporters accept that is true. I mean, it's quite obviously not true, but he does hold sway over his supporters.
And, that he does.
It's going to be a very vigorous campaign that he will wage.
All right. Thank you very much, David Barrett. Barrett is a political science reporter, a professor at Villanova University. Thank you very much for joining us.
Sure. My pleasure, Steve.
Now, in Iowa, Democratic officials are still tallying up the caucus votes, with Pete Buttigieg continuing to hold a slight lead over Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. AP's Julie Walker has this update.
The results followed 24 hours of chaos as technical problems with a reporting app marred the complicated caucus process, forcing state officials to apologize and raising questions about Iowa's traditional place atop the presidential primary calendar. It was too early to call a winner based on the initial results, but Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, and Amy Klobuchar were trailing Buttigieg and Sanders, according to data released by the Iowa Democratic Party. Meanwhile, the candidates are now focusing on New Hampshire and that state's primary. I'm Julie Walker.
An avalanche slammed into a mountain road in eastern Turkey on Wednesday, wiping out a team of rescue workers who had been sent to find two people missing in an earlier avalanche. Officials said 12 rescue workers were killed and about 15 others were buried in the snow, brings the total death toll to at least 21. A plane also skidded off a runway Wednesday in Istanbul's Sabiha Gökçen Airport, crashing into a field and breaking into pieces. Passengers have been seen evacuating through cracks in the plane, and authorities said some were injured. Television footage shows the plane was on fire and had broken into at least three pieces. Hundreds of people were evacuated from their homes and farms Wednesday to escape floods in southern New Zealand. Authorities told many residents in the towns of Gore, Matora, and Wyndham they should leave immediately as rivers continue to rise following heavy rainfall. Malawi's president has instructed his lawyers to appeal the court ruling that nullified last year's presidential election and ordered a new vote. Monday's ruling was just the second time in Africa that a court had nullified a presidential election that happened after 2017 in Kenya. Around 3,700 people are facing at least 2 weeks locked away on a cruise liner anchored off Japan after health officials confirmed on Wednesday that 10 people aboard the ship had tested positive for the coronavirus and more cases were possible. It follows a steep rise in the deaths in China and airlines suspending flights to Hong Kong, with the virus affecting people in more than 20 countries. Reuters' Michelle Hennessy has more.
A cruise ship in Japan carrying nearly 4,000 people has found cases of the coronavirus. Several people have already tested positive, but the number could still rise as hundreds await their results. Healthy passengers are now in quarantine on the ship and will have to stay on for 14 days. Sick passengers, meanwhile, were taken to a medical facility by the Japanese Coast Guard. News of the outbreak is spreading fast across the world. At its epicenter in Wuhan, local media have said buildings like an exhibition center and a gym are being transformed into makeshift hospitals. It comes as the death toll nears 500, while around 25,000 people have been infected. Video obtained by Reuters showed hospitals in Wuhan at maximum capacity. Long lines of people were waiting outside a local hospital. Inside, meanwhile, the eyewitness video showed a crowded waiting room. As the fast-spreading outbreak shows no signs of slowing, spreading to every region of China. Its capital, Beijing, home to 22 million people, has turned into a ghost town. Authorities are ordering people to stay home to try to contain the outbreak. Videos from the sprawling metropolis show empty subways and deserted shopping malls, fueling concerns about the knock-on effect to businesses and the wider economy. Outside the mainland, two U.S. airlines suspended flights to Hong Kong following the first virus death confirmed there on Tuesday. American and United Airlines both announced they were suspending flights after this week, and Hong Kong authorities warned of a significant risk of it spreading within the community.
So we have to closely monitor the situation.
But among the grim news of rising death tolls and quarantines, inside Wuhan, there was a message of hope.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sunny.
A 9-year-old living in lockdown urged people to push on.
We shall overcome as a city. We shall overcome as a country. We shall overcome as a people. 加油, Wuhan! 加油, Zhongguo! Thank you.
That was Reuters reporter Michelle Hennessy. Now, speaking today at the World Health Organization headquarters, WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said that 99% of the current coronavirus are taking place in China, leaving only 1% of the cases outside of China. Dr. Tedros also said that all cases of China had some connection to the Hubei province, the epicenter of the outbreak. He also announced this new initiative.
Today we're launching a strategic preparedness and response plan to support countries to prevent, detect, and diagnose onward transmission. We're requesting $675 million to fund the plan for the next 3 months.
Taking a look at the origins of the coronavirus, many health experts believe the novel coronavirus that originated in China initially passed to humans from a wild animal, probably a bat. That's why some disease experts are looking at the wet markets in Africa and Asia, where live animals, including things that are butchered, are sold. VOA's Adam Phillips reports from New York.
Yanzhang Wang, a senior fellow for global health at the Council on Foreign Relations, reminded reporters that Chinese experts linked the first 45 cases of the coronavirus to a single fresh produce and meat market in Wuhan.
And now the Chinese agree that this is a not good habit of eating wild animals, you know, the live animals. And the government has imposed a ban on those animals, not just in Wuhan, but in the entire country. We hope that they're going to actually extend the ban to be permanent. But again, the issue is how to enforce that ban.
Huang was speaking at a recent briefing at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. New York Times correspondent Sherry Fink, who reported from West Africa during the Ebola outbreak 6 years ago, said that completely shutting down wet markets that sell wild animals for food would be problematic. In West Africa, for instance, wild animals are often a much-needed source of nutrition. Fink also is unsure if banning wild animal meat would be effective in containing a disease outbreak.
I'm no expert, but I do remember that everybody focuses on these markets, and it turns out that the majority of cases are coming through human-to-human transmission at some point. But obviously, you do want to be monitoring wildlife and limiting that leap from the animal kingdom to humans.
Thomas Boyke is Director of Global Health at the Council on Foreign Relations and the author, most recently, of Plagues and the Paradox of Progress. He is concerned that the ability to monitor, control, and treat disease outbreaks in sub-Saharan Africa lag behind the systems in wealthier countries. Boyke noted that international aid levels are lower in 2020 than they were a few years ago. The U.S., for instance, has cut its overall budget for global health security under President Donald Trump.
Nobody expected it to maintain at the heights of 2015 or 2016 of $1.3 billion in terms of the response to the Ebola outbreak, but it has dropped down to pre-Ebola outbreak levels, maybe a little bit less. African CDC has already taken measures to start to prepare and to coordinate an international response. I hope we don't end up having to relearn the lessons that we learned from Ebola again in this context.
Health authorities on the continent remain on high alert. As with any infectious disease, people are advised to wash their hands often, to avoid touching their nose and mouth after touching public surfaces, and to exercise caution in public spaces, where experts say sneezing and coughing may transmit the virus. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And you're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
The European Space Agency's new solar orbiter is being readied for a planned February 9th launch from Cape Canaveral in Florida. Its mission, a collaboration between the ESA and NASA, includes making close-up observations of the sun from high latitudes, which will allow the spacecraft to snap the first-ever photos of the sun's polar regions. At its closest approach, the spacecraft is expected to come within 42 million kilometers of the sun's surface. The spacecraft has 10 state-of-the-art instruments that will capture high-resolution images of the sun and its outer atmosphere called the corona, as well as measure its magnetic fields and the solar wind. ESA says the Solar Orbiter's mission will provide unique insight into how the sun works within its 11-year solar cycle and how it might be possible to produce more accurate space weather forecasts. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Turkish counterpart Recep Tayyip Erdogan agreed to take immediate measures to improve the coordination of their countries' actions in Syria. Reuters' Emer McCarthy has more.
Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan said Turkey and Russia should resolve differences over the conflict in Syria's Idlib without anger, after a deadly flare-up in violence challenged the fragile cooperation between Moscow and Ankara. The two countries support opposing sides in Syria's nearly nine-year war. In a phone call on Tuesday, Putin and Erdogan highlighted the need to follow Russia-Turkey agreements on Idlib that envisage increasing cooperation to neutralize extremists, the Kremlin said. Turkey's report on the same phone call said that Erdogan told Putin that Turkey will use its self-defense rights in the event of another attack on Turkish military personnel in Syria. At the United Nations on Tuesday, Secretary-General Antonio Guterres called for an end to hostilities to keep the situation from getting out of control.
That was Reuters reporter Emer McCarthy from Reuters News. UN agencies report hundreds of thousands of civilians in the northwestern area of Syrian province of Idlib are facing a humanitarian emergency and are in desperate need of life-saving assistance. Lisa Schlein reports the United Nations is appealing for $336 million to assist some 800,000 people over the next 6 months.
Many of the more than 3 million people in battle-scarred Idlib are in a state of perpetual motion. Relentless bombing by Syria and its Russian ally is forcing tens of thousands of people to flee in search of refuge, but there are no safe zones. Countries bordering Syria have repeatedly closed their borders, forcing people caught up in the violence to keep moving in this area where no open escape routes exist. Over the past 2 months, spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Lajerke, says more than 500,000 people, most of them women and children, have been displaced from their homes. He says many flee with nothing more than the clothes on their backs.
They say there are no safe place in Idlib. Bombs fall everywhere and anywhere. Even those fleeing the frontline areas are not safe. And there's just a sea of people moving in all directions as the airstrikes and shelling has continued throughout the last 2 months.
The UN Human Rights Office has recorded at least 83 civilians, including 20 women and 33 children, who have been killed over a 10-day period between January 20th and 30th. The agency reports escalating fighting has killed more than 1,500 civilians over the past 9 months. That is when Syrian forces began an all-out military assault to retake Idlib, the last rebel-held bastion in the country. Lajerke says Idlib's hundreds of thousands of displaced are in urgent need of shelter, food, water, and sanitation, as well as health care, emergency education, and protection. He says the biggest challenge is providing shelter. He notes thousands of people are crammed into schools and mosques. Many are in tents in the mud, exposed to wind, rain, and freezing weather. He says humanitarians are working tirelessly around the clock to help these suffering people, but the scale of the crisis is overwhelming and the aid available is not enough. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our excellent production staff today, Director Nadia Taha and Engineer PJ Elliott, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.